When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Good morning, everybody. It is 7 minutes past 11. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. Our number, lines are open, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, thinklink.com, and expertrealestatetips.com, which has all kinds of interesting stuff, including most of our 500-plus videos. We've got this cool YouTube channel. So I wanted to start today with just a couple of little highlights in the news, and if you want to call in and talk about them, happy to do it. Job creation was dismal at 142,000 jobs, almost 100,000 less than was anticipated. Doesn't really sound like an expanding economy. But then we saw the stock market hit yet another high for the fifth week in a row. The S&P 500 ended at 2007, crazy number. And then we saw Europe actually lower its central bank deposit rate down to 0.15. So this is like the Fed cutting its federal funds rate even further. How is that even possible? So we've got some craziness going on, and then we see Charles Plosser, one of the Federal Reserve presidents, not the overall governor, but saying that he thinks that we're going to see interest rates in the U.S. rise sooner rather than later. What I've always said is that when you see interest rates go up, you know that everybody's starting to really think, at the Fed anyway, that the economy's getting better. Right now, interest rates are as low as they've ever been. The federal funds rate is basically near zero. Basically, you're getting negative interest rate after inflation on your savings. And in Europe, you're truly getting negative inflation on your negative savings due to inflation. So nobody actually thinks that the economies of Europe and the U.S. are doing any better. There was a contraction in Germany and Italy over the summer in the last quarters. That's not so good. So worth thinking about and worth moving on. I do want to talk a little bit about how you should prep your house for sale. We have now entered officially the fall selling season. And there used to be this division between selling your home in the spring, which everybody agreed and still agrees is the best time to sell a house, and then the rest of the year. It was kind of like, we joke around in Chicago, it's kind of like you get 3 months, 9 months of winter and 3 months of fixing the roads. That's how the seasons break out. Kind of the same thing when it comes to selling your house, except now when you look at the net sales throughout the year, spring is stronger. There's no question about it, but it's not that much stronger. And the rest of the year, fall is the second strongest market, followed by, and I know you can't even believe this, Christmas. The season from Thanksgiving to Christmas, winter holidays, whatever you want to call it. Thanksgiving all the way to Super Bowl Sunday at the beginning of February, that used to be completely dead. All the realtors took their vacations and everybody was off. Today, not so much. And so here we are at the beginning of the fall season, and fall is signified not by the actual date of, you know, the 20th or 21st, whatever it is, of September, but back to school. So now pretty much everybody who's going off to school in grammar or secondary school is off. Colleges, almost all of them are off. Of course, there's like kids like my son who don't leave for another week, but most kids are gone. And so parents can turn their attention to getting their home sold before the next semester starts. So if your kids run on a semester system and you have to live in the district where you want to send them to school, unless you want to pull them out in the middle of the semester, which some people do, you really want to be ready to go for January 7th. And so this is the time when everybody starts to really think about it. So I wanted to give you some tips while you call in to ask about your real estate questions. And we'll talk about landlording and we'll talk about investing in real estate. I've got some ideas, new ideas for you there. And we've got some lines still open. Brad, hang on. I'm going to get to you in just a minute. 404-872-0750. I want to give you three things to think about if you're going to prep your house for sale right now, this fall, and get it ready to go. Number one, what are other homes like yours selling for in the neighborhood? If you don't know this piece of information, you cannot begin to make a decision about what you're going to do to your house to fix it up to get it sold, how you're going to position it, who your competition is, who should actually be listing the property. You can't get anything done. You must know what other homes are selling for. And to find that out, you should actually go to the houses and start visiting them as if you were going to buy in the neighborhood. And when you sign in, you can sign in and you can make up a name, or you can just, you know, you don't have to actually leave your information if you're worried about being inundated by real estate agents. But it's a really good idea to engage the real estate agent who's at the open house and talk to him or her about what's happening. Because I think based on the fact that there aren't that many buyers out there right now, they will be have more than enough time to chat with you, and you'll gain some real on-the-ground knowledge and insight about what's going on in the neighborhood. How long are homes taking to sell? What kind of homes are buyers looking for? Who's buying in this neighborhood? All of those are really important questions. That is the number one thing you have to do. Gain information, figure out what's selling in your neighborhood and for how much. Number two, you have to understand how you compete in that marketplace, and so you're going to start fixing up your house for sale from the outside in. Outside, because you got to take professional pictures. By the way, a new study came out this week and said that homes that had professional photos, of course, this was sponsored by the Photograph Association of America or something like that, but if you have pro photos or digital, beautiful digital photos taken of your home inside and out, it's going to sell faster and for more money. And that's just easy to understand, actually, because people can see it. But outside in, right, you've got curb appeal, which today means you've got to be able to see it from whatever computer you're sitting at. So lots of really beautiful photos, the exterior, drive-by showings. People are now, before they commit to coming to see your house, they're going to drive by lot line, decide if they like how you look in the neighborhood. Are you the cutest home on the block? Do you have the best garden? Can they do the most work to you? Can they see how much work needs to be done outside to inside? Once you do that, you cross the threshold. Now we want to freshen up the interior, clean it out, fresh coat of white paint on the walls. You've got, maybe you need to change the carpet or just clean the carpet. You've got to get all the personal stuff out. Basically, your house has to look like HGTV. And if it doesn't, on my YouTube channel, Expert Real Estate Tips, I've got a whole bunch of ideas about in video form on how to stage your house for sale. And I encourage you to go there and look at them. They're all free. So outside to inside, that's the second thing you have to know about getting your house ready for sale. So number one is, what the heck is going on with the neighborhood and how do you fit into that whole picture? Number two, clean your house, get it ready for sale, outside to inside. And the third most important thing is to decide what kind of seller you are. What kind of seller are you? Are you desperate and anxious? Are you totally underwater? You got to unload this house. You can't move on with your life. Are you desperate and anxious to let it go at any price? Are you a realist? Do you really understand what it takes to sell your house today in this neighborhood? Or are you pie in the sky? You still think it's 2003 and you can price your home $100,000 above asking and everybody's going to clamor to get a piece of your house. Well, maybe they will. It depends what you're offering. I mean, if you've got a house that every investor would want, or you live in the best school district on the best block and everybody's going to want that house, or you've got a fabulous showpiece with a huge garden that runs down to the Chattahoochee River, as I have seen some houses, then maybe you can put a pie in the sky price on it, but probably not. So you got to understand what kind of a seller you are, right? Desperate and anxious, realist, or pie in the sky, and then you've got to price your home accordingly. And if you follow those three steps, you will achieve your goal. You will be able to sell your house. No questions about it. It'll happen for you the way it should happen, which is to say there should be a really decent amount of interest, and within 30 to 60 days, you're going to have an offer. And your house is going to sell, and you're going to get to move on with your life. That's what gets to happen if you tick off those three boxes. 404-872-0750. It is, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. We're going to have to break for news. Brad, stay tuned. We're going to come back in a moment. 1-800-WSB-TALK. We have lines wide open. Follow me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. When we come back, we're going to answer Brad's question about being a landlord. We're going to talk a little more about the economy and what is going on with jobs. I have some ideas that I think will maybe make sense to you. I think they're making sense to me, but it's a very strange time with unemployment not really moving as much as you would expect. Over 2.5 million people in prime working ages 25 to 54 have left the job market, are not looking for jobs, do not wish to engage, and this is actually terrible news for the economy. So why the stock market's going up when employment is going down, we'll explore it next on the Elise Klink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Klink is live, answering your money and real estate questions. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Everything to you.
1124 on the Elise Klink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. Brad joins me on the line from Marietta. Hi, Brad. Thanks for holding.
Hey, no problem. How are you doing, Elise?
I'm doing great. What's going on in your world?
Hey, I wanted to tell you I'm a huge fan, and I've been listening to you for years now, about 6 or 7 years.
Thank you.
I think you've got a real good take on the economy and real-world events and things. You always kind of like the disconnect you just mentioned about the stock market versus employment.
Yeah, isn't that like a big question mark right above your head?
It is, and nobody else seems to be talking about that. Nobody seems to be able to figure that out, and it's very intriguing to me, which is kind of what I'm thinking about in terms of wanting to become a landlord.
Ah, you're thinking real estate versus a crazy, insane, doesn't quite make sense stock market.
Exactly. And, mm-hmm. I've got a small brokerage account and had it for about 11 years, and I'm kind of thinking that we may be near a top. And, again, the disconnect you just mentioned with the real world and the stock market makes me wonder, do I need to become a landlord? And another thing that's kind of pushed me and prompted me is the neighborhood where I live. Every time a house goes for sale in this neighborhood, it's gone in 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they sell fast here. And there's one that's real close to me. I've had my eye on because the man who lived in the house, let's just say he had some health problems, and I knew the house was going to come on the market eventually. Well, it's now on the market, and the clock is ticking because I'm thinking, wow, this is, I mean, I'm getting just hit with everything right now. Do I want to buy this place, or is now the time? And
now is the time, Brad. You're looking for permission, and I'm going to tell you right now, it isn't going to get any better than a house you know you've been watching in your neighborhood. You've got cash. You want to take some cash off the table. I mean, I wouldn't divest entirely of the stock market unless you don't have another 20 years to go.
And I was not planning to.
But you got extra cash. You got this house there. Interest rates are ridiculously low for investors.
Okay, well, and here comes, this is probably too much for the time we've got, but here comes the next couple of little challenges for it. Number one, I don't think my credit's good enough for me to be able to get it, but I've got cash where I could pay for it. But that's going to put me very thin on my total cash. It's going to take, let's say it's going to take about 75% of my cash.
Okay.
Which, again, I don't have a problem with. I can get by.
What does that leave you with in terms of numbers? How much cash does it leave you with?
At least, I would say $40,000.
And how many months of expenses is that?
That's a year's worth of expenses.
So you're done. I would say you're done because you're going to rent out this place, and it's going to start bringing in cash. You're not going to have a mortgage. You'll have taxes. You'll have insurance, but you're not going to have a mortgage, and so your cash is going to quickly replenish.
Okay. Well, and the next problem is I've got a friend who has numerous rental properties, and he says he could kind of wish he could kind of get out of that because of, I guess, some of the new laws where they made that some renters can move in and they can kind of like just take over your place, and you got to file papers and do et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
There's always a problem with getting rid of some renters. There's just no question that, you know, evictions are probably a way of life for a lot of people. But there are ways around that, and there are ways to find great tenants that if you want to stay on the line, because if you can hear the music, it means we're coming up to a commercial break. But if you stay on the line, we can talk a little bit when we come back about tenants and finding great tenants. Because, you know, Sam and I, knock on wood, have owned rental properties for the last, I think it's 15 years, and we've not had to evict anybody. And I think part of that is because we're really good at screening them. And part of them is we're looking for the right people in the right places. So let's talk about that when we come back. 28 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
It's 11:36 on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. Having a very lively conversation on Twitter. Follow along at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. But don't just be a lurker, be a participant. Join the conversation and call with questions, 404-872-0750. We've been on the phone with Brad from Marietta. Brad is looking around his neighborhood. There's property for sale, a house that he's had his eye on for a long time, and the clock is ticking, so he's thinking that he would pay cash for it as opposed to getting a mortgage, which would leave him with just about a year's worth of cash for expenses. But his concerns are that renters can come in, and then he never can get rid of them. So what I wanted to talk about is how to find a great renter. Would you, Brad, is that an accurate description of our call so far?
That's a very accurate description.
Okay. So one of the things that Sam and I learned a long time ago, and I learned this from my cousin Carol, who's rented out the first floor of her townhouse in Oakland, California, for the last 25, 28 years. And one of the things that she discovered years and years and years ago is that if you underprice slightly the rental unit, you will have a long line of people who come and put in an application and are willing to tell you all sorts of things about themselves, allow you to do a background check, allow you to call references, allow you to tap into, you know, their bank accounts and all the rest, and will then offer, depending on how far below market rate you are, to improve the property, fix it up, do all the maintenance, the yard work, and all the rest. And so for years, she has been successfully renting out her place, and she gets long-term tenants. She raises the rent just nominally, but she gets fabulous people who have improved the property, taking care of it. One person rebuilt it. One person repainted the whole thing. One person put in new appliances. They were there for 5 or 7 years. So there are some really good thinking ways, right, for you to evaluate people and get a whole lot of people to choose from. Because if you only get one person because you're trying to get an extra $100 a month, you're not going to get the best tenant. But if you price it at $50 or $100 less than the going rate, so the perceived value of the property is huge, you might have a list of 100 people who are putting in applications, and that is going to give you a huge group to choose from. And while it's annoying to have to do that, you can say, well, I want a two-year, I'm looking for a two-year lease. So that'll really cut back on the amount that you actually have to, time and effort that you spend looking for people. So what do you think? What kind of people would want to rent in your neighborhood, Brad?
Well, probably families, families of young children up to high school age, I would think. That's mostly what lives here, and then older people that are kind of retired. That's pretty much.
Okay, those are two great demographics for you. Families that come in that want to take advantage of a high school generally stay 4 to 8 years, depending on how many kids, right? Assuming 2 or 3 kids, and they're each 2 years apart, you could potentially have a tenant for 8 years.
Yeah.
And while, yes, you'll have to do some work to fix up the house after they leave, 8 years of not having to find tenants, of not having to scramble around, you know, kids in high school, that tends to be super stable. That's great. What about seniors who want to be near their kids who have kids in high school? Even better. Seniors, once they get in, they would rather just not leave until they're going to a place that's like an old age home or a senior living facility or something like that. And so they're terrific tenants. They don't want to cause problems. They just want stuff to work. They take care of it because that's how they like it to be. Those are great tenant demographics. So I think if that's your target tenant, then take this little piece of advice on slightly underpricing the rent.
Sure.
And seeing who you get. And I think if you advertise it correctly, you'll do great. The other thing that you can do is to really push the property on Zillow and Trulia, although those are now almost the same company. They will be shortly. But you list the property. You put up a bunch of beautiful pictures when you've got it in shape. You get the rent up there. You can even do a video. They allow you to do so much. It's all free. And then you can drive traffic through social media or whatever there. The other thing you can do is just print up an old-fashioned sheet. I do this for my block party. This afternoon is my annual block party. So if you've listened to the show all these years, you know we do one every year. And we print up a sheet on colored paper, and we slip it into everybody's mailboxes. Don't tell the post office because that is technically illegal, but we do it anyway. We get a great response rate. But you could do the same thing for this rental unit, because people who like a neighborhood and like a school district are always looking to have family and friends who want to move near them, or they want them to move near them. And so they're always looking for an opportunity. And that's another great way to rent out property. It's actually something that we learned a long time ago from people who are trying to get rid of timeshares. And so they said that was a really interesting way to kind of unload a timeshare. But this would be a great way for you to just reach out, get this place rented. So I think you're going to have a really good experience here.
Okay. Hey, let me throw one more question at you. In terms of the attorney, I need an attorney on my side. I was pretty impressed with the 1031 guy that you had on one of your that you've been associated with. I can't remember his name.
Ricky Novak?
That's him, yeah.
Yeah, he's great. He's come to a bunch of our, when we do the
seminars.
Yeah, the seminars,
right.
Which I am seriously, I spoke at one, and it kind of reignited my passion to do this again, because I just want to do it right. And so I'm thinking now, we have to wait to get through football season. I never get a good turnout during football season in Atlanta, even if it's like on a Friday. I think everybody's just prepping for the dogs. But anyway, yeah, Ricky Novak, and I can put up his website for you on Twitter, or you can just find him. It's SEA1031.com, I think. But I'll check that, and I'll talk about it a little bit later. But he's great. So if you're going to do a 1031, you need a 1031 when you're selling an investment property.
Well, I understand that. I was just
But it's an attorney. That. He is an attorney, and he would certainly be able to help you find a real estate attorney if he couldn't do it himself.
That's kind of where I was going with that. I didn't mean to get off track with that, but you got me completely on that.
Well, one thing, Brad, I would say to you is take advantage of my Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate series. It's so designed for people who are just at the beginning stages of it. If you go to thinkglinkstore.com, use the code BUYNOW, BUYNOW, you'll get 75% off. It's the deal of the year. I've kept it all there all year, and so many people have taken advantage of it. Since I'm not doing a seminar right now, a lot of the people that you've asked about or you've seen at my different seminars, we interviewed them for this. It's a great series. It's really helpful. I'm also hopefully going to be writing a new book called Working Smarter, Not Harder, Real Estate Edition, all about how real estate investors can just be smarter at what they're doing. So we're negotiating the contract right now. Keep your fingers crossed, and we'll see how that goes. And, Brad, thank you so much for being a long-term listener. I really appreciate it. 404-872-0750 is the phone number here. Kenton joins me on the line from Atlanta. Hey, Kenton, welcome to the program.
Hey, Elise. Just real quick, I'm in the process of going through a short sale right now. The bank has asked me to report the $20,000 that they've forgiven on my taxes this year. And I was wondering, I had two questions. One, is there any way to get around that? And number two, typically how often does the IRS go after you for that money? So just wondering
Oh, my heart breaks for you because the whole short sale thing, they're still fighting in Congress to try and get it extended. And at the moment, it has not been extended. And so your $20,000 shortfall?
Yes. And so okay. The bank is like is wanting me to report that to the IRS.
You have to. You're required to, and okay. They're required to. And if they report it but you don't, that's a red flag. So okay. You want to report it. So the $20,000 translates into an increase in $20,000 on your salary. So what is your salary in a given year?
It's about 50 and some change.
About 50. So this now you would earn about 70.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of how they look at it. So what happens is your marginal tax rate may or may not go up. So of the $20,000, you would basically owe 25% of that.
Okay.
Roughly. It depends on your deductions and if you take the standard deduction and what else you've got going on and how many depend. You know, there's like all kinds of stuff that go into it. But let's just say it's roughly 25%, and so what you would really owe is $5,000.
Okay.
So
and that would be this tax year?
That would be this tax year due next April 15th.
Okay.
So you've got some time to plan for it, and it'll all get wrapped up into the amount that you owe. Now, you also have some time for them, while I would be saving as much as you can, so the $5,000 doesn't come all at once.
Right.
But for example, if you normally get money back in April... Then this might be a way for you to just get, you know, you'll owe maybe $1,300 or $2,500 instead of...
It can offset that money.
It offsets it, exactly. The other thing you might be able to do is just increase your withholding at work.
Okay.
So that's a painless way to pay for it, right? Because you've got a whole lot of time between now and April 15th when that amount would be due. And if you divided up $5,000, right, into little chunks, it's not so horrible. Especially
okay.
If you're getting money back. And so I think what I would do if I were you is sit down with who does your taxes? Do you do them?
No, I have a CPA that does.
So I'd call your CPA and say, listen, I'm in a tough spot. I took this short sale. I know it's going to come due next year. I was listening to Elise Glink and she said maybe I could offset it. What do you think, based on what happened last year with my taxes, what do you think the tax ramifications are going to be for April, and how would you advise me to best offset that so I don't have to come up with $5,000 next April?
Okay.
And I think he'll say something like just increase by, you know, X percent. Maybe it's even $50, $100 a pay period, you know, your deductions. Or he'll say, oh, well, you're already getting back $2,500, so now you only have to do this. I think he'll have some strategies for you.
Okay. All right.
And I'm so sorry. And then there's always the chance that Congress will come to its senses and extend this another year or two.
I hope so.
I just wouldn't count on it because nobody in Congress seems to have much sense anymore, right?
Right.
Not to get into a political discussion, which I'm not going to do for everybody else who wants to now call in. But, man, it's just so every year it gets more disappointing.
Right.
So, Kenton, let me know how it goes, okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right. Good luck. It's 48 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. We have in today's AJC, there's an investigation on the relationship of Cobb County parents whose toddler died in the car. That horrible story, which continues, and now they're looking at the parents and what their relationship was. That's in today's AJC, if you want to pick that up. We've got news, weather, and traffic next. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Elise Glink, Sundays on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
55 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB, 404-872-0750. Let's get in another quick call before we go to break. Sherry joins me on the line. Hey, Sherry.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm awesome. What's going on?
Well, I'm calling with a textbook issue. My husband and I both work, and we own a home and a secondary property we bought before the economy tanked to build a house on. We're upside down on both properties, and we did nothing wrong.
Okay. So you've done nothing wrong.
Right.
So you joined millions of other Americans who did nothing wrong.
Right. That's why I say we're textbook. What I'm asking about is, when do you see the economy turning around where we could actually sell and have money to build our house?
That's really hard. I mean, you actually, when you say you did nothing wrong, I mean, what you technically did wrong is you bought property at the wrong time.
We bought it before the economy tanked. We didn't see that coming.
Right. Who did? Well, at least nobody's quite as big as it did.
Right.
So the problem is that the economy is kind of in a slow rewind. It's really interesting to me. I look at it and I look at the stock market. I said this at the beginning of the hour, and Brad, actually, the first caller, commented on it. There's this disconnect between the stock market hitting new highs and, you know, the fact that we had a pretty severe contraction in the first quarter. Then supposedly the economy went up 4% plus in the second quarter. And then this third quarter we've seen, or the last, you know, this has been kind of a mixed quarter where the job growth is way below what everybody thought it would be.
Right.
And so the economy's kind of, you know, this weird mixed signals thing. There's over 2, maybe 3 million people of prime working age, 25 to 54, who are not working and not looking for a job and don't feel like they could ever get a job that would pay what their old jobs paid. And so they've kind of just opted out. And getting those kinds of people engaged is really important. Wage growth is vital. When you look at after the inflation rate, there's basically been negative wage earnings over the last 40 years. It's just not affordable for people. People are, you know, they're talking about, and this is interesting because I've done some research on FICO 9, which is the brand new FICO credit score that was introduced, or they're about to introduce it over at FICO, and nobody is taking that score. And in fact, all of the mortgage lenders that I have found and can talk to are using a credit score model that's like 20 years old.
Well, so I mean, we've tried to refinance and do different things, but we just don't fit into the right category.
Have you done, for HARP, the Home Affordable Refinance Program, you don't qualify for that either?
I don't know that my husband's finished that process. We are looking at that, but I will say we have a child in college and another one coming into college, so my idea, 6-year plan, is to wait till they're both out of college and then see if it's time to sell.
I think that that's actually a good plan, especially if your house is affordable. You know, vacant property is really dicey anyway, so, you know, maybe you'll get to build on it someday, maybe not. You know, you won't be able to finance that if indeed you did the first time. If not, and you paid cash for it, you might as well just dump it now. But you said you're underwater, so I'm guessing you were able to finance it. You know, 6 years of waiting might be what you need to do. It just is so hard to figure out when every single neighborhood is going to come back, especially to an unrealistic place. Maybe I'll talk about that when we come back to give you a little bit more perspective. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, answering your money and real estate questions. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. It is 12:06 on WSB. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We were talking with Sherry before we went to break, and she said that she works, she owns a house and a secondary property, it's a vacant lot, and they're upside down and everything, and they did nothing wrong. Well, the only thing, as I pointed out, they did wrong is they bought at the wrong time. But a lot of people made that mistake. But I was having an interesting conversation this week with a real estate guy talking about what is the right time and the wrong time, and when we get back to the highs of the market. Like, when will that happen? We were looking at it through the lens of new construction, which is having another dismal year. I don't know any other way to put it. So with the new numbers of people entering the marketplace, this was kind of the old line of thinking that we needed to have housing starts of around a million, million and a half a year, and actually put a million new houses in the ground just to keep up with population growth. And what's happened over the last 7-8 years is that people have moved back in with their families. 20-somethings are pushing off into 30-somethings. The average age of first-time buyers is up to 31, 32. It's probably going to go to 33, 34. And it's really changing the fundamentals of the real estate market nationwide. That's not to say that we don't get calls in the show from 25-year-olds who are buying properties. They are. But we're also seeing a shift. There's just a change. And in any way, shape, or form that you think about it, the number of new homes that are built and sold this year, sold being the optimal word, is dismal. I mean, maybe we'll hit 400,000, 430,000. Maybe it'll be 337. In any way, shape, or form, it's like 60% below where it should be. And so when people talk about getting back to the highs of the marketplace, what do they actually mean by that? Because I don't see us going back right now to where we were in 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006. I don't see that. I do see us getting to a place where we're selling 700,000-800,000 new units a year. And by the way, construction isn't bad. We're just building apartment buildings, not condos. And frankly, I had a conversation before I even went on the air today with somebody who's underwater with their condo in Atlanta. So for as good as the market has gotten, for as high as the market has rebounded, or well as the market has rebounded in Atlanta and other places, it's still not perfect. There are a lot of people underwater. In fact, as we were coming back, I just heard a Wells Fargo ad for yet another one of their homeownership preservation workshops. Sounds like it's September 9th. So if you're a Wells Fargo mortgagee, and you've got a Wells Fargo loan and you're underwater, you probably want to go talk to them on September 9th. So where are we going? Where are we coming back to? And when are we going to get there fast enough? And so the answer is I'm not really sure. There's so many conflicting pieces of information in the market right now that I think economists all over the country are really having trouble understanding it. Hence, economists who thought we would have a whole lot more jobs, like 100,000 more jobs created than we did last month, right? So the top economists in the country who are getting polled in these surveys don't even really understand where we are. Everybody missed the contraction in the first quarter. Then from that lower number, we had 4% growth. But if you think about where we were from original, it was really marginal growth, right? And now it looks like we're sort of middling again. Europe has had contractions in the last quarter. In Germany, which was considered the big strength of the economy, right? And I can't remember where else. The PIGS, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Spain. What's the other P? Oh, my gosh. I can't even think of it right now. They're sort of muddling ahead. So there has been just, you know, a mix of what's going on. China is seeing a slowdown. Latin America is seeing things slow. Some go a little faster. Some go a little slower. It's just very, very mixed. And so when you think about all of that, and you think about the disconnect of the stock market, which is really based on ultra-low interest rates and companies buying back their own stock, and a whole lot of bizarre option trading that's going on right now, I can't tell you when we're going to get back to what normal is. And what is the definition of normal anymore? I think that's changing too. Normal is shifting. We are in a generational shift. We are moving to out of Generation X into Generation Y, and the millennials are coming into the workforce. They are a very different breed, very different. And they are interested in different things. They are thinking about the world in different ways. They're maybe trying to save the planet. There's just a lot of different stuff going on. And so when you think about your own house and what that means and what was important to you when you bought it may not be the selling point for anybody in their 20s or early 30s. Maybe you need to be aiming at people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. And that's an entirely different conversation to have, completely different conversation to have. And we'll continue to have it on the show. 404-872-0750. Let's get back to the phones. Jessica joins me on the line from Norcross. Hi, Jessica. Andrew, would you please plug in Jessica for me? There we go. Hi, Jessica. How are you?
Good. Hi, good afternoon. I purchased a property. I went to the Georgia International Convention Center about 3 years ago through auction.com. Purchased the property for $17,500 in Southwest Atlanta, paid cash for it, put some renters in there, and decided to sell it last year. So I put it on the market last year, and an investment company put an offer in. I had a sale tag on it for $69,900. Mm-hmm. They came, viewed the home, and then after viewing the home, made an offer for my asking, $69,900. So I'm like, great, we're under contract. And then maybe, I don't know how many days passed, but while we were under contract, they dropped the offer to either 50 or 52. And I was just crushed. And now, granted, there was some work that needed to be done in the basement. It was a 5-bedroom home where the basement, some mold had gotten to the basement. But again, they were privy to this prior to making the offer. As I mentioned, they saw the home prior to making the offer. So my question is, I was just, it just hurt me because I felt like the rug had been pulling out from under me. And my realtor at the time said, you know, Jessica, this is the new thing. They get you under contract, blocking out any other potential offers, and then they drop the price. And I wanted to know, had you heard, is this some type of new trend that's going on?
Let me stop you and just say, did you sell the house to them?
I did. And
how
I was
much?
Also going to say, I'm so grateful. You know, it's a catch-22 at the same time. I'm really grateful. We ended up closing at 54.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you bought it for $17,500 and you sold it 4 years later for $54,000?
Just under 4 years later, correct.
Okay, pretty great investment for you, right?
Yes, it was, and I am grateful.
So you have to separate out your emotions. Like, I'm listening to you talk about how crushed you were. This mm-hmm. is a business transaction. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be pushing you down. You have to be smart enough, and you have to have an agent smart enough to help you fight back. So there are some things. This is the oldest trick in the book. I mean, buyers do it. Investors do it. These guys are ruthless, right?
Okay.
You're entering, if you're not tough enough for this game, don't get in this game because there's no room for feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You being crushed is not the right response. You saying, hey, you saw this, you don't like it, let's get out of the contract because there's six other investors behind you who want to buy this property. That's mm-hmm. the response you give them.
Okay.
That's what they understand, and your agent is not smart enough for you because your agent should have said, okay, they saw this ahead of time. This is a game that I see played. You know, let's get out of this contract, or I've already structured this contract for you so that you can continue showing the property until they actually give you money and close on it. There are ways to combat this that you need a smart attorney. And I will say, let me just say something about a real estate attorney. You're buying investment real estate, you need a real estate attorney. You should not be having your real estate agent give you legal advice when you're being a real estate investor. You need somebody who's actually smart enough, who's seen these contracts, seen how this is done, and can protect you. And if you had read my intentional investor series or watched the videos, what I do is I talk about this incredible team that you need if you're going to buy and sell real estate and invest in it and try and build a huge financial portfolio for yourself. You've got to get the people who know how to do this day in and day out. And it sounds like you got super lucky. 4 years ago, you were willing to buy something for $17,500 that nobody else was willing to buy. You tripled your money in 4 years. That's great. However,
yeah.
Were you smart enough to do a 1031? Were you smart enough to protect the income tax that you were going to pay on that property, long-term capital gains, so it was less? But did you make savvy shifts and did you go out and buy something else and all the rest? That's what having the right team in place helps you do. Limit your tax on when you go to sell and then feed that cash into the next purchase so that you can build something of stability. So you sound to me, I'm listening to you talk, and I'm thinking, she has got it on. She's smart. She's gutsy. You take risks. You've got all the right pieces to be a great real estate investor. Now you need people on your team who know what they're doing.
That's a go. Yep, I appreciate that. It ended up, I didn't pay capital gains on it because it was my primary residence. I rented it out because it was catty corner. It was right by Atlanta Metro College, right by the AUC. So I just lived in one room. I had someone else in another room, someone else in another room. All three of us lived there because we were, you know, young. I'm in my early 30s, you know, around that age. Everyone was working, so I was still living there. So that's how I didn't have to pay the capital gains tax.
So that's great. So then not only did you triple your money, but then you also pocketed the rent from everything. So you're basically living rent-free.
Yes.
So this was like a huge win-win-win for you.
It really was.
And you were crushed because you didn't get an extra $10,000. Let me tell you something, Jessica.
I take that back.
No, because that was an honest thing that you said.
Yeah.
And I'm jumping down your neck because you're smart enough. You are smart enough to be able to learn the difference between a business transaction where nothing personal is meant and being a successful, you know, personal person investor, like you're investing just for yourself and your money, fine. But business side, and this is a good lesson to learn in business too, it's rarely personal, right? And that's a really smart thing to learn. But look at all these things you did right, and you were well rewarded for it. And in your life, I will tell you that $10,000 that you missed out on, that is a cheap lesson for what I'm telling you that you have now learned.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It is a cheap lesson. You won't miss that $10,000 30 years from now, but the lessons that you learned will help you earn that over and over again 1,000 times because you are never going to allow yourself to be crushed in a business transaction personally and be personally disappointed. You're going to fight back, get informed, hire the right people, move forward, and be successful. And that is going to be your prescription in life.
Yep. Thank you, Elise.
You are great. This is a great thing that you did, and everybody who's listening should take heart because it's so awesome to have somebody call who had the guts 4 years ago to put cash on the table and rent it all out and do all those right things. So good for you. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
That was such a great call, wasn't it? Jessica, you rock. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. Let's do our prize pack right now. Pair of tickets to see the Tedeschi Trucks Band in concert on September 12th at Chastain Amphitheater Park, produced by ASO Presents. A pair of tickets to see the Alliance Theater's presentation of Bull Durham, now through October 3rd on the Alliance stage, and a Kroger $25 gift card. The prize pack value is 245 big ones. You can get it by calling the prize pack line, 404-741-0750, 404-741-0750. Good luck. You can only win once every 30 days. So those of you who keep calling, check your calendars, make sure it's once every 30 days, and good luck. So you may have seen a tweet earlier in the week that I'm going to start hosting an internet show on a brand new channel called Wit Nation, WITNATION.com. Wit Nation is the brainchild of Grant Cardone. Grant's been a guest on the show a couple of times. He's a big-time real estate investor. I think he's been on Shark Tank. He's hosted shows. He has a radio show. He's a guy who knows how to sell. Sells like crazy. And he wants you to sell and make money, whether you're buying or selling in real estate. I'm going to be the real estate, residential real estate expert on Wit Nation. We're constructing our plan right now. We've got a meeting tomorrow to talk to all the tech people to get the show up and running. And there's going to be an opportunity. Oh, Crystal tells me it's once every 60 days now that you can win. Sorry, I thought it was every 30 days. But for WitNation.com, we're going to do this internet show, and I'm going to be able to take Skype questions from you. So if you can't get on Sunday mornings with us and you're listening to this, say, on Monday morning and it's the retape, or if you want to talk and you just can't, you know, don't think about it Sunday mornings, you'll be able to Skype in questions. We're going to have conversations with really interesting people. I'm going to show you best deals of the week. There's going to be all kinds of cool stuff that I can do with video that I cannot do with radio. But excited to have you on board. So watch for information about that coming up next. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Elise Glink, Sundays on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
I know your old soldiers will fade away.
It's 12:36 on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Chatting actively on Twitter today, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Check out expertrealestatetips.com and thinklink.com as well for great information. All right, let's go to the phones. Paul joins me on the line. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon.
What can I do for you today?
Well, I've got a situation where I'm trying to give advice to my son, excuse me, who is a young investor out of college and bought a fixer-upper around 2010 and bought it from an agent owner and had an inspection on the house and looked like there were some issues, but nothing that didn't seem to be insurmountable. At this point, after this number of years, he's found that there's been separation in the basement, and there's a pool in the backyard that supposedly has caused leaks that is pushing the basement wall in. The house has shifted to some degree, which has warped the garage doors. Went back to talk to an attorney about recourse against an agent broker that didn't disclose that he'd had this problem before and didn't report it. And that was nothing to do with getting any money out of the agent. Went back to the inspector who I think did a lousy job, but no recourse against that. There's errors and omissions that wouldn't cover anything like that. So he's stuck with the house. He wants to get rid of it. I only see that he could sell this to an investor or do a short sale or jingle mail and turn it back into the bank.
Well, let's start with, is he living there?
Yes.
And how much is what did he pay for the house in 2010?
$170,000.
Okay. And did he have a lawyer or did he have an agent of his own at the time?
No, it was an agent broker. And
so he bought it without any representation whatsoever?
Well, we did have a closing attorney.
That's a bank's attorney that isn't representing your son's interests or anybody else. Did you co-sign the house?
Did I what?
Did you co-sign for the house?
No.
So he had enough credit on his own to do it?
Yes, and he had some money, some cash.
Okay, what's the mortgage?
About $135,000.
Okay, and what's the house actually worth?
I would say it probably wouldn't appraise for much over $110,000, $115,000.
Okay, so does he have enough cash to make up the difference?
If the
mortgage is $135,000, if the house is worth $100,000, then there's about a $30,000-$35,000 difference there. So does he have the cash to make that up, or is he just going to do it as a short sale? Because that would be a pretty big hit as a short sale. If he was going to do that, he should have done that last year when he could still not at least get a kick in the gut for income taxes, which he's going to get.
Okay. No, he doesn't. He doesn't have $25,000 or anything like that to put back in it. The estimates that we're getting are somewhere between $50,000 and $60,000 to fix the wall, fix the foundation, the garage doors, the internal, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
okay. So, what is your question for me?
Well, I guess the only thing to do would be either do a short sale or foreclosure.
Okay.
I don't see an investor buying it. But we're going to look and see if there's suggestions on how to find investors to take a look at the house. I'd like to know the best way to do that.
So I guess the question is, did when you talked to this attorney, who I assume is an attorney specializing in seller disclosure issues?
Yes.
And was there a way to prove? Because you have to prove that the agent owner knew or should have known of the problems. Do you have proof of that?
Yeah, the people that we had come out, AquaGuard and other companies, to look at the damage in the shifting said, oh, well, we've been over here before with the previous owner.
Okay, and so then did you go back to the agent owner and say, we know you knew about this, why didn't you disclose it?
Couldn't get to him. He had left the city, and from all indications, he'd claimed bankruptcy, went to Florida, lived with his mother, and claimed bankruptcy.
Okay, so you're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
Unless he was working on behalf of his company, and the company is still in business. Now, if he was a sole operator, that's one thing. But if he was working...
He was working for a broker that signed off on the deal, and the broker, as of 2 years ago, had his license in retirement.
Okay. So you're stuck. You're stuck here. So, on your son's credit, a short sale is going to be better. If you have $35,000 and can get him out clean and he can pay you back over time, that's better. To get an investor interested, you might want to list it on auction.com, or which will get the most interest nationwide. Or you can have your son set up a website for the property. I don't suggest you list it. You can put a sign in the yard, simply because I think it's going to cost you a lot of money to unload it. And if you list it with a broker, and that's just more money you have to come up with. So if you can if you can figure out a way to come to the closing with enough cash, that would be ideal, because it'll save your son's credit at a time where he's going to need it. It will also, auction.com ought to help you get the most money you can in a short sale. But if you're doing a short sale where you're not going to come to the closing clean, meaning that you're going to kick in money to close it out clean, then you're going to have to get the bank's approval for the short sale, which is going to take another 6 months to a year. But if you can make up the difference, then you can list it for sale on your own, employing things like Zillow and ForSaleByOwner.com and or Auction.com, all the rest, and kind of limit your sales costs, and then figure out a way to come to the closing with cash. That's going to be the best way to go. Otherwise, you can do the jingle mail, and you would try to do a deed in lieu of foreclosure, but I think a better way to go is to try these other things first. Best advice I can give you, and I'm so sorry for your son, but he made a bunch of mistakes going into this, so it's unfortunate it didn't turn out the way that Jessica's did, which was, beautiful and triple the investment and all the rest. 404-872-0750. Thank you, Paul, for the call. Let me know what happens. Let's go back to the phones. Marilyn joins me on the line. Hi, Marilyn.
Hey, Elise.
What's going on?
I have been interested for a couple of years in purchasing real estate at a tax sale, and I have found a property that will be at auction on Tuesday for a very small amount of taxes, under $1,000, but it's a $400,000 property in a great neighborhood. What are my chances of actually winning the auction, and how often do buyers redeem the property within that first year?
Often they redeem it. Sometimes what happens is the taxes don't get paid because there's a death in the family. Sometimes it's people just forget, or the mortgage company makes mistakes. So what are your chances of getting it? Probably pretty low, but you should go and try anyway.
Uh-huh.
And, maybe you'll get it for $1,000, maybe you'll get it for $5,000.
Right.
Have to see what it is.
Yeah. If I did get the property at the sale, am I responsible for paying the taxes for next year? I assume that I am.
Yeah, you're responsible up until the time that the property is redeemed.
Right.
So, and they get a certain period for redemption, usually a year or two?
Right. It's a year in Georgia, I believe.
Okay. So,
to take a few steps to notify them, at the end of the 1 year period, and then If they don't respond, then the property transfers to me in fee simple, and then I can take possession of it.
Correct. So they will pay, they have to redeem the property, pay you back what you've invested, and there's an interest rate that goes along with it. So if you get the property, even if they redeem it, you're going to make good money.
Right. And that's part of my goal in doing this. I mean, I would love to have the property because it's in such a good neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But also, even if I don't eventually get the property, it's a, you know, I make some money off of it.
Correct.
So
there's no loss here. You should go and try, and then you'll see who you're up against.
Right. Well, and there are a lot of, you know, tax lien purchasing companies that show up at these things and bid, and so I'm sure that there will be other people trying to get this particular house because it's in such a good neighborhood.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know. I guess I'll just go and see what happens.
Well, I think you should go and see what happens, and then you should call us back or send me an email at thinklink.com and let me know what happens.
Okay. Are any pitfalls that I should be aware of at all?
No, just don't overpay for it and watch what happens. You know, the fact that you know this property and like it is great. One of the big mistakes is people get caught up in the bidding. They bid too much, or they bid on properties. They don't get the property they want, but there's another one they think they know. So then they bid on that. It turns out to be a very different sort of property, different sort of engagement. You know, but people have made a lot of money in tax sales over the years, and they continue to. And it's not a bad way to go.
Okay.
Tax liens take precedence over every other kind of lien.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a nice thing. And you know, if you can win. You're, like I said, there's interest that gets paid to you on the money that you invest when they redeem the property, and if they don't, you get the property. So it's not a terribly complicated thing. You just have to make sure you follow the rules of the road in terms of if you get the property, what the notifications are, and you win the tax lien and all the rest. But it sounds like you're on top of that, Marilyn. So you have nothing to lose but a little bit of your time, and I think you should try. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, answering your money and real estate questions. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
12:54 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. Barbara joins me on the line from Washington, D.C. What's going on, Barbara?
I have a neighbor that lives next door.
Mm-hmm.
And he has these humongous trees. And for years, I have been cleaning up the leaves. They have started falling again. And each year, I have to pay someone. The trees are over, and the leaves are falling now in my yard. Now, my neighbor on the next side of me, up next door to him, she's complaining also. What can we do about this?
Well, you know, the thing with trees, most people really like them. But if you find them to be awful, have you talked to the owner of the property about the tree?
Yes, but and the reply was they never expected the trees to grow as tall as they are, but there are two of them, and there's one on the other side over there. But I don't understand someone's thinking, knowing that trees are going to grow.
Well, trees don't always grow the way you think they're going to grow, and sometimes they grow a lot bigger than you imagine when you plant them, and they're just little baby trees.
But no, this was here when he bought that house, because I was here before he moved here.
So one of the things that you can do is if a tree crosses over on your property line, you can cut off that offending branch, but you can't cut enough of the tree to actually kill the tree. So you can say to the guy, you know, listen, I don't really want your leaves in my yard, but and I'm going to cut your tree. I think that'll probably cut the beauty of it, and you should really cut it at the trunk. Right, which he may not allow you onto his land to do. So then there's nothing you can do about it other than just let the leaves sit there, or when somebody cleans up your yard, they clean that up as well. But those are the only two things. You can't cut enough down to kill it, and since the tree is on his property, it's his tree. and he has the right to do it. But it sounds like you've let this go on for years and years and years, Barbara.
Yes, we have. And it's gotten to the point now that we are retired and we have to pay someone to come in to, you know, to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's unfair. Now, I hope that nothing ever happens, but I hope like hell that when it does fall, it falls his way and not on my way.
Oh, Barbara, I hope you're not even in the house when that happens. You know, trees can live so long. We have a neighbor who's having a tree issue, too. One of the neighbors that bounds her side perpendicular to her lot has just taken down all of the trees that provided all sorts of cover and protection. And it's absolutely driving her crazy because now he's out there blowing his leaves at all hours of the day and night. And he's doing all kinds of work, fixing up the house. And all they wanted to do is sit in their backyard and enjoy the view. And now they've got this guy who just moved in, who's going crazy with their landscaping and tore down all the stuff and wants more light. And what is she going to do? She's going to plant all sorts of really mature tall trees to block his view so she can have her peace and quiet enjoyment again. And he won't be able to do anything because she went to talk to him about it and he wouldn't listen to her and say, you know, she was like, well, what are you doing? Let's try and work together on this. He just took everything down because it was on his side and there was nothing she could do. So now what she's going to do is put up trees on her side. It doesn't actually make for good neighbors. And speaking of that, today is my annual block party. For those of you who listen to the show, you know that for 19 years, I've been doing a block party for our whole neighborhood in our backyard. We've got over 50 people coming today. So excited to see everybody. If you have never held a block party, hold one. Get to know your neighbors. Barbara, this is good for you, too, because this is the way that you get to be on friendly terms and you start to work on things together as opposed to just getting mad and then trying to get even. I hope you have a good and profitable week. I will be back next Sunday with another edition of the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. In the meantime, go to thinklink.com, sign up for the free weekly newsletter, take a look at witnation.com, which is going to be where my new video show airs, and be sure to follow me on Twitter @Glink. Have a great week, everybody.